Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Green Party presidential candidate Howie Hawkins. So, Howie, both of the conventions are over. Give us your assessment. What do you think?
Well, the Democrats talked about what a nice guy Joe Biden is, but they didn't really give people a reason to vote for them in terms of issues and policy. And the Republicans tried to tell us Donald Trump was a nice guy, but he spoiled that in his last speech, which was full of racial invective and dog whistles dividing the country. So it was pretty miserable.
Did you watch any one of them?
Yeah, I did watch, you know, Biden's speech and Trump's speech, and I caught news about the other speeches. I didn't have time to watch it all, so I saw clips.
So, you know, it seems as though there's been a blackout as far as the Green Party is concerned. And, you know, the two candidates, I don't think people are happy with either one of the candidates. So what's it going to take for this country to wake up and listen to alternative views to the Wall Street parties?
Well, I think it's going to take the Green Party and the independent left electing thousands of people to local office and from their state office in Congress so that we have an institutional foothold in the political system and we cannot be ignored. You know, in the presidential race, one of our objectives is to get state ballot lines so that we can run local candidates much more readily. The petitioning requirements for independents in this country are off the charts. So that's a big goal, particularly here in New York, where Governor Cuomo got a new law passed under the cover of the pandemic during the budget bill back in April that tripled the number of votes we need to get as the Green Party to stay on the ballot. So the New York Times, when they found out about it, the headline was "Democrats' Secret Plan to Kill Third Parties." So whether we even have an opposition to the two corporate parties on the ballot in New York is on the ballot this election. And we're going to need at least 2% of the vote, which is probably going to be close to 200,000 votes, which we've only done twice as Greens, Ralph Nader in 2000 and me when I ran for governor in 2014. So I hope people will keep that in mind that, you know, Biden's ahead of Trump consistently by 24 points or more since the spring. All the polls show that. So the question for progressives is, how are you going to vote against Trump? You're going to vote for Joe Biden, who's against Medicare for All, the Green New Deal, and all the things the Greens stand for? Or are you going to vote for those programs and let the politicians, you know, what you stand for? If you vote for Biden and you're for those things, you get lost in the sauce. They don't know you want Medicare for All. You voted for Joe Biden, who's against Medicare for All.
So when you listen to the news or read the newspaper, are you disheartened by this political season?
No, we knew it would be difficult. It doesn't dishearten me. It angers me. I mean, we have corporate state media, the big corporate media. They're just stenographers for the two-party corporate state. They just repeat what, you know, Trump and Biden say. And there are life or death issues that are not being discussed, like the climate crisis. The three words Green New Deal was never mentioned during the Democratic convention. That was a signature issue of the Green Party in the 2010s. I was the first to run on it in this country in 2010, running for governor. And then our presidential candidate, Jill Stein, the theme of her two campaigns for president in 2012 and 2016 was a Green New Deal for America. And the phrase got attention when the Sunrise Movement and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez sat in Pelosi's office after the 2018 election demanding a Green New Deal. But then when the non-binding resolution for a Green New Deal went to the Congress from AOC and Ed Markey, it took our slogan and diluted the content. So it dropped the ban on fracking and new fossil fuel infrastructure, which is the frontline demand of the climate justice movement. And they cut out transferring funds from military spending to a Green New Deal to protect ourselves from climate change. And it extended the deadline to zero out carbon emissions from 2030 to 2050, which is too late. And then they've basically buried it. You know, AOC, you know, shipped off, you know, developing the details of a Green New Deal to a think tank, which never produced a plan. And now it's not even mentioned in the whole Democratic convention. So there's no Green New Deal coming from the Democratic Party. Or take another life or death issue, this new nuclear arms race. The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists has their doomsday clock, the closest it's ever been to midnight. The U.S. undertook a nuclear weapons modernization program under the Obama administration and continued under the Trump administration, which has destabilized the nuclear balance of power. So now Russia and China are modernizing, and it's creating a very unstable, dangerous situation. And so, you know, the Green Party is the only party saying we need peace initiatives to reduce tensions and then negotiate nuclear disarmament. And the rest of the world is, you know, they want that. There are 122 nations agreed to a treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons 3 years ago. And the International Campaign for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons got the Nobel Peace Prize for that. And hardly anybody in this country knows that because the leadership of the two major parties and all the presidential candidates don't talk about it. They support the nuclear modernization program. And the corporate media, you know, because, you know, these people won't talk about it, they won't talk about it. So we've got this nuclear Armageddon hanging over our heads, and there's no discussion of it. It's you know, so I'm not disheartened so much as I'm angry. You know, we need to start getting power, you know, for the Greens and the left. And the way we're going to do that is at the local level where we can compete, because there it's more door knocking than spending a lot of money on advertising, and build a power base from the bottom up. And then, you know, the corporate media is going to have to pay attention to us. Until then, I'm afraid they're just going to be stenographers for the two-party corporate state.
But as of right now, Steve Greenfield is having a lot of trouble getting press coverage. He's running for as a Green in the 19th District of New York. And if he's not getting any press coverage, it's difficult to wage a candidacy solely on social media. So even on a local level, the media is not responding.
Well, Congress is a large district. When I say build power from the bottom up, local races, I'm talking about town boards, city councils, school boards.
Okay.
And then when you have a lot of Greens elected at that level, and then you run somebody for Congress, people are going to say, well, yeah, we know the Greens. We know who they are. We see what they do. We trust them. And, you know, then it's hard to be ignored. But, you know, it's much more difficult to run a congressional race where you have hundreds of thousands of voters to communicate with. That takes money. And aside from the media, I mean, earned media, which is what we're talking about, you know, that's what they call it when you get covered by the newspapers and radio and TV. You know, the major party candidates, they don't rely on that so much, except they rely on paid media. You know, those ads we see and those they send in your mailbox. And, of course, those are very superficial. They're full of lies and distortions. So you really don't get a good debate on the issues. And that's partly the problem that, you know, the media is under trouble. You know, newspapers, their business model doesn't work because the advertising revenue has gone to social media. And so you have many fewer reporters, fewer newspapers. Same thing in radio and TV. We've had such a consolidation that you don't have independent local stations with their own reporters. Their news staffs have been cut. And so even if you have a political base and you get the coverage that the local media can do, it's not that much. It's not as much as it used to be, which brings up a whole nother issue of media reform, which has not been discussed at all by the major party candidates. But I think we need to go back to the antitrust restrictions on cross-ownership of different media platforms in local markets, against the monopolization of local markets, so we encourage lots more independent ownership and different points of view covering the news. And then I think, given what's happened in newspapers, we should have public funding of investigative journalism locally. So there's public money, but to keep it independent of the state, the boards that allocate that money should be selected like we select juries, by lot. And that will reflect the community. And then we can get more local journalism funded without relying on media advertising, which biases toward business interests that can afford it, or control by the state.
And we have 60-some-odd days left in this campaign. I had seen you on Susan Arbuckle's program in New York, upstate New York. Have you been on the major cable TV shows, MSNBC or CNN at all?
Not at all. And we've been, you know, pitching, you know, stories to them and reasons why we should be covered. And it's worse than in the past. I mean, Jill Stein did get covered by MSNBC, CNN, and Fox. Not to a large extent, but she did get some coverage. I've got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they just seem to have got more and more focused on the two big candidates. I think Trump is part of the reason because, you know, Fox is pumping him up and CNN and MSNBC are scared stupid by him. So they don't even want people to know there are other options on the ballot.
It's totally so mind-boggling. After South Carolina, when Biden won South Carolina, up until that point, it didn't look like he was much of a winning candidate. After South Carolina, everything just fell in line. You know, his former rivals were saying what a good guy he was, integrity and dignity and stuff. And none of it is true. But these people that are listening and watching, they believe it. This whole thing is fabricated. Wouldn't you say?
Well, the whole Democratic Party leadership lined up against Bernie Sanders right before the South Carolina primary. You know, they got all the other candidates to drop out and endorse Biden. And it was obviously coordinated and organized because the corporate Democrats didn't want Bernie Sanders to get the nomination. So, you know, that's what happened there. Now, I think the voters, they took the message that was given to them is that Biden can beat Trump, Sanders can't, which if you actually look at the polling is not true. But so they got Biden, and I'm a little bit worried that Biden, because he's not giving people a reason to vote for him, he's basically saying, I'm not Trump. I'm not a divisive asshole like Trump. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it's like, okay, but what's that got to do with my life? And I think a lot of people that might come out, you know, would have come out for a Bernie Sanders saying, we're going to get Medicare for all. That was his signature issue. That we know from public opinion polling is majority support would have excited the base and got him out. Biden is not exciting the base. And, you know, that should be a concern. It's not here in New York. I mean, if Trump even gets close to Biden in New York, that means Trump winning by a landslide across the country. I don't see that happening. I think Trump is in big trouble. You know, the polls show after the conventions, they really haven't changed that much. And Trump is losing in the battleground states as well as nationally. So, you know, Biden should win walking away. But, you know, I'm a little bit nervous that he's not giving people a reason to vote for him. You know, he's basically saying, I'm not Trump. And everybody know Trump is, you know, he lies every time his lips move. He doesn't care about regular people. He only cares about himself. I mean, most people can see that now. But still, if Biden doesn't get his base out, he could be in trouble.
Wow. What I find very interesting is, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. After South Carolina and everybody fell in line behind Biden, what do you say to the fact that Wall Street is running this whole show? Both candidates are catering to Wall Street, and the heck with the population in the country. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, we have a two-party corporate state, and they fight over some cultural issues, but they're on the same page when it comes to a conservative economic policy, which is, you know, balanced budget conservatism, unless it's tax cuts for the rich, which, you know, Trump got through. But when Reagan did it, you know, Biden was the big cheerleader in the Senate for the Democrats doing it. He helped write that bill we call the Reagan tax cuts when he was a senator. So
Wow. They
are, you know, both economically conservative, and then foreign policy, very aggressive. Trump lies about bringing the troops home. There are more troops in the Middle East since he took office, and those endless wars haven't ended. And Biden has no plan to end them. He's always been a military hawk. So, you know, on those things, yeah, they do agree, although they, you know, they're different on the cultural issues. You know, the Democrats rely on lip service toward, you know, racial and cultural equality, although in practice they don't really have policies that do much about that. The growing economic inequality, which is also racial economic inequality, has gone on for the last 45 years under both Democratic and Republican administrations without easing up. It didn't depend on who was in office. So, you know, in economics, they're on the same page. So, you know, that's what we're stuck with. And then, you know, you talk about Wall Street funding. Yeah, they're funding both sides, including this dark money. That's the money that we don't know who gave it. It could be anybody. Could be totally illegal, but they can give it to what's called a 501c4 nonprofit. They don't have to disclose their donors, and they can spend on elections to a certain extent. Or they can pass that on to a super PAC, which has to say where the money's coming from. But if it comes from a 501c4, they just say that 501c4. And that hides the original dark money that the 501c4 got. So Biden has been asked, you're against dark money, which he is nominally. So why are you taking it to the tune of tens of billions, millions of dollars? And, you know, there's one super PAC, they were talking about $60 million in dark money backing Biden. And he says, well, I don't want to unilaterally disarm. You know, I was interviewed by Business Insider about that question, and they didn't quote this part of what they did quote, but I said, Biden could have made that an issue. He could have said, you can see where my money's coming from. I'm clean. Trump's got all this dirty, dark money and made that an issue. And, you know, if Biden really wanted to get rid of dark money when he's elected, he would make it an issue, so he had a mandate to do so. But the two major parties, they like that dark money. And without a mandate, but the voters saying, yeah, we're voting for Biden because he's going to get rid of dark money, and he's not taking it in the campaign, he's making it an issue. Without that mandate, you know, Congress is not going to back him up if he does make a move toward that. But I don't think he will. I mean, he was part of the Biden-Obama campaigns, and they broke a lot of promises, like to the labor movement. They said, we're going to get card check passed. That's where it was called the Employee Free Choice Act, where if a majority of workers in a bargaining unit sign a card. Then they're supposed to get union recognition and bargain with the collectively bargain with the employer. And after the 2008 election, Obama didn't push it, and then it was diluted in the Senate, and then it just never got voted on. And he said, well, if I get reelected, I'm really going to do it. And when he got reelected, he was very arrogant to the unions. And he just said, no, I'm not going to do it. You know, too bad for you. It was, and, you know, Biden was very much a part of that. So whatever promises he makes, like he says he doesn't like dark money, I don't believe it. I think he will do the bidding of corporate interests as he has his whole career. I mean, he's from the state of Delaware, after all. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
where Trump had Michael Cohen set up a LLC to pay off his mistresses, you know, before the last election, because corporate forms are so unregulated in Delaware, you know, the state of the DuPonts, you know. And so you've got insurance, you got corporate chartering there, and you've got this very conservative military, industrial, and chemical company, DuPont. That was the real power structure that Biden represented from Delaware. So shame on any progressive in New York, where Trump is going to lose badly, if they vote for Biden because they think it's a vote against Trump. You're voting for the system that you think you're opposed if you're a progressive and you vote for Biden in New York.
What do you say to people who say, I like Howie Hawkins, I like what he says, but this is too important an election to vote against Trump? What do you say to people who will vote for Biden rather than you on principle? Your principle, not theirs.
Well, in New York, they're wasting their vote. Trump is going to lose. The question is, how are you going to vote against Trump? A green vote is a much stronger vote against Trump and Trumpism. I mean, let's remember, Trump represents an old trend in American politics. It's the white supremacist racism that, you know, was represented by the Dixiecrats in the Democratic Party of the South and now the Republican Party down there. And was mobilized in the Republican Party when the Civil Rights Movement was starting to make gains by Goldwater. And so that, you know, that goes back to the, you know, the Redeemers who ran, Democrats ran on the slogan of white supremacy to defeat the Republicans and Reconstruction. That has always been there. And people say we get Trump out of office, but that trend in American politics will still be there. Now, fortunately, it's a minority. And it's aging out. They're older. They're losing demographically because it's becoming a more diverse country. And they shouldn't have any power at all. It's only because of gerrymandering, which was controlled after the 2010 election by the Republicans in many states, that protected their districts. So, for example, in congressional districting, in some of these elections where the Republicans took the House, they lost the popular vote nationally by a million or two or 2 million votes because of gerrymandering. And they only have the White House because of black voter suppression, which is, you know, more subtle than it was under Jim Crow, but it's the same thing. They purge voter rolls with methods that disproportionately disenfranchise black and Latino and Asian and young people. They don't put polling stations in minority communities or put enough in there, so they have long waiting lines, which discourages voting. In 2016 in Detroit, they put in broken scanners. That city's 80 or 90% black, voting much more for Clinton than Trump. And there's 75,000 ballots that have never been counted from that election in Detroit. And it wasn't the Democrats, it was the Green Party that took the state to court saying, count those ballots. And the Republican Secretary of State, who had sent in the broken scanners, which meant there were more ballots in the precinct than had been scanned by the machines, he argued that, well, because of that discrepancy, something fishy went on, and they should not be recounted. Of course, what was fishy was he sent in broken scanners. The Greens were saying that's exactly why they should be recounted. And the Clinton lawyers were present in that court proceeding. And the judge said, well, do you have an opinion on this? And they said, oh, no, we're just here observing. And then the Democrats turn around and blame us for Michigan, the Green Party for Michigan, where the margin was 10,000 votes. The margin was in those 75,000 votes in Detroit that were never counted, or those ballots. I mean, and I could give you story after story, state after state. You know, in Florida, you know, they blame Nader for Bush winning Florida. There are a lot of reasons why Bush won, but one of them was black voter suppression. Jeb Bush, George's brother, got the Secretary of State, Catherine Harris, who was chair of the Florida Bush campaign, to purge the rolls of about 100,000 black people on the grounds that they were felons when they weren't. I mean, that right there would have made the difference in the election. And they want to blame the Green Party. I'm talking about the Democrats. And so people that think we get Trump out of there and the Democrats are going to fight Trumpism, they've accommodated it all along the way. You know, if they want to get rid of Trump, they could have impeached him a long time ago. Not with this narrow impeachment around the Ukraine at the end, and it was abuse of power and contempt of Congress. And when the proceedings were done, it was more about national security issue in Ukraine, which is not at the top of the minds of most Americans. Meanwhile, Trump has been inflicting harm on workers and consumers and the environment. And there were, you know, his rap sheet is a mile long. You know, he's self-enriching. He's encouraging lawlessness by law enforcement agencies. I mean, there's so many grounds to impeach him. And if the Democrats wanted to get rid of Trump, they could have got rid of him a long time by going to the issues that Americans are concerned about, that Trump is violating the law in his oath of office. And, you know, Pelosi said we don't want to do that because it might make some of our members in purple districts where, you know, Trump won but the Democrat won the House vulnerable. And, you know, I think that's terrible politics. And that's not how you fight. Some people call them fascist. I think it's just the old-fashioned, you know, racism in this country. And like I said, it's a minority. They should, the Democrats should be crushing the Republicans. They don't have the majority support. But, you know, like we were talking about, behind closed doors, they get together on the economic and foreign policy and run this two-corporate party state, not in the interest of the majority of Americans.
So, Howie, our time is up for today. So if anybody wants to become involved in your campaign, volunteer, send a donation, how could they do so?
They should go to our campaign website, which is howiehawkins.us.
All right, Howie, let's talk again. You know, we have 60-some-odd days, and a lot's going to unfold between now and then. So I look forward to talking with you again. So you've been listening to Howie Hawkins, Green Party candidate for president. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. And if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Howie. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a